Don't get all threatened just because you don't understand the concept of marriage.
You dress him like that so nobody else wants to have sex with him. That's cool.
Hello and welcome to episode 74 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I'm Perry Nemiroff and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hey! Hi.
All right, so we missed last week because we were all drowning in Comic-Con madness, but we are back this week and we're going to be talking about two new wide releases, Trainwreck and Ant-Man. First up is Trainwreck. Christy, you've got that one.
Yeah, so Trainwreck stars Amy Schumer, and here is the plot synopsis. Having thought that monogamy was never possible, a commitment-phobic career woman may have to face her fears when she meets a good guy. So this is the Amy Schumer movie that like hit South by Southwest months ago and got a whole bunch of praise, and now it's finally come to theaters so the rest of us can see it that aren't Perry. Yeah. And I gotta say, I thought it's a lot of fun. It's I admit it's not as subversive as I kind of expected, considering I'm a big fan of Inside Amy Schumer, but. You know, it's really fun. It takes the classic idea of you normally get like the womanizing guy who's like, I bang lots of chicks, but now I found a smart girl and maybe I'll be a good person. And like, that's what Amy Schumer's character is going through, is that she is just having all the sex. And
One of the things that surprised me is how conventional of a romantic comedy this is, other than the gender switch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like that's not necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, but I think, like you, I was expecting it to be more subversive and to break the mold a little bit more. But, you know, it's fun in its own way to see something that follows formula but with a gender split.
And I think it's actually a smart move because this is Amy Schumer for the masses. Like, this is an Amy Schumer that your mom might even be able to get behind, even though they're promoting this as not your mom's romantic comedy. It's not. It is way crasser and, you know, there's definitely things that I wouldn't, like, want to sit with my mom
and watch. My mom's going to see Trainwreck this weekend.
Yeah, I think my mom would like it. I don't want to watch it with her. Like, there's some scenes that I would be embarrassed watching.
There will
mom.
Be a time, I guarantee you, where I am sitting in the living room watching Trainwreck with my mom. And it's okay. I'll get over it.
My mom has highbrow taste. She likes things like Boyhood, so.
My mom's still trying to get me to watch Wild Hogs, so that's where we're at. But yeah, I think Trainwreck is a lot of fun. I think Amy Schumer is a great lead in a movie. I think she shoulders it really well. She wrote the script, so it's, you know, it's written for her. But she plays it really well. And it's also really fun just to see a character like this on screen who is a train wreck in respects, but is also still very relatable. And like, there's a scene where she's this is effectively her first real relationship, even though she's in her like early 30s. And there's a fight scene where they're upset about something and Amy doesn't know how to deal with it. Her character is also named Amy. And they have this awkward fight that gets off the rails and confusing, and it won't end because he says, well, my parents said never go to bed angry. And I do, as a longtime married person, support that advice. But yeah, it also does make for nights like the one you see in the movie that are just grueling in the nonsense, because you're trying to kind of figure out why you're upset and having a hard time pinpointing it, and it becomes this like argument about oral sex, not really. And I think it's very true to life, but also just ridiculous enough to make it a really fun comedy.
That's probably why it was as much fun as it is, and it isn't mean-spirited, because some of the jokes definitely could be like insulting and a little too mean-spirited, but at the same time, most of them are about something that everybody can relate to a degree. And there's something just so undeniably likable about her also. Even though at the beginning of the movie, like, she doesn't... I felt so bad for John Cena. That was one of my favorite sequences in the entire movie.
Can we talk about the supporting cast?
Yeah.
Because they're all incredible.
You brought up John Cena, but it also stars LeBron James. And the amazing thing is these two are athletes starring in a movie that's like full of amazing comedians, and they steal every scene that they're in. But it also has like Tilda Swinton, who's nearly unrecognizable. She shares a screen with Ezra Miller from We Need to Talk About Kevin, making it the most bizarre, like not quite sequel ever. Like Daniel Radcliffe and Marissa Tomei randomly show up for no real reason. Like, it's like pretty much everyone you could think of is in this movie.
The only one that I wasn't thrilled with was Vanessa Bayer's character. That to me was like the lowest of the low of commercial comedy, like in terms of like the type of role. She just didn't add anything to this movie at all.
Well, I think it's tough. She's supposed to be the parody of the best friend who gives the bad advice, and I get that, but I don't think it totally works. I did think her other coworkers, including, now I'm forgetting his name. He played Kim Jong-un in the
Randall
interview.
Park.
Thank you. He kills me. He's only in the movie for like 3 minutes, but like he's so good in the 3 minutes.
I feel like that sentence applies to a lot of the supporting actors in this movie.
Yeah, because it's a Judd Apatow movie, so obviously they get the call. It's like, hey, you want to be in a Judd Apatow movie? And they're like, yeah, I will be on set for a day and have 2 minutes in a movie. I will do that. But yeah, I like the movie a lot. For me, the thing that doesn't work is that it is a Judd Apatow movie, so stuff goes on a little too long. Because he's kind of a chief aggressor of not being able to kill his darling. So I feel like he's holding out scenes so he can get to that one last joke. But, like, collectively, even though you might be glad in the moment you got that joke, like, collectively it makes the whole movie feel a little long.
Yeah, that's one of the things that makes me not want to say, you know, I wish he had just shaved 30 minutes off of the movie. Because if I was challenged to pick 30 minutes to pick out, I don't know if I could do that very easily. Because all of the jokes in here work very well, and there's no scene that I think is expendable.
Yeah, it's not
like... There
are
no scenes that I think are expendable. There are definitely scenes that could be shaved down. Like, there's this one where Amy Schumer is on a treadmill because Bill Hader is trying to show her some technology, and it's funny. Everything in it is very funny, but it also goes on for a really long time, and that's the kind of thing that, like, I wish that he had cut that scene in half and saved the other material for, like, a deleted scene on the DVD or something.
Another thing that was weird to me is we talk about how long this movie is, but apparently a lot did hit the cutting floor because a lot that they're showing in the trailers is not in the movie, which I have mixed feelings about.
It's funny because the very first image that they ever released was of Amy Schumer and Bill Hader having drinks at, like, I don't know what they were drinking or what kind of bar they were at, but it was the first still ever. It's like your first impression of the movie, and it's not in the movie.
Yeah, it's like all over the posters and everything.
I did the set visit, so I know what happened in that scene is that basically their, like, accidental date becomes a pub crawl where they go to a bunch of different Brooklyn bars, and they were so proud that they had shot in all these different Brooklyn bars, and they were telling us all about it, and then none of that is in the movie. And, like, there's a scene in the movie where they're on a horse and carriage, and, like, that doesn't happen in the movie. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because I still think those scenes capture the spirit of the movie, and so it's not like it's totally dishonest. And then the upside is that you're not being spoiled on jokes in the movie, but it's still weird.
I feel like that's true of, like, literally every Judd Apatow movie, though. Like, I remember even with This Is 40, there were all sorts of, like, jokes that were in the trailers that weren't in the movie. And it's fine, but it's just kind of like what you get when Judd Apatow makes a movie.
I'd be curious to see what the deleted scene list looks like for this.
Right? I do think that this is his sharpest comedy since, like, probably 40-Year-Old Virgin or maybe Knocked Up. Like, it's been a while, and I feel like he's kind of just been steadily growing more and more self-indulgent, and it kind of seems like having a fresh talent and a fresh perspective in the form of Amy Schumer has really just kind of made him up his game again.
Yeah, I think it really does focus his worst tendencies. I think it's a pretty good comedy. I do think it's a little bloated, and some of the stuff gets a little wobbly for me, but overall, I really like it. I recommend people see it. I'm not going to say it's the best comedy of the year, because for me, that's still Spy, but, you know, this is great.
It's probably worth noting that I'm assessing this movie now still having only seen that working cut, but it seems like we're still on the same level about just about everything here. I'm very curious to finally get the chance to see the final cut and see if anything has been taken out. But what was the running time on this? Was it 2 hours?
It was about that.
Because that's pretty... That's basically what we saw, too. So I have a feeling they probably didn't take all that much out.
It's actually over 2 hours. It's 125 minutes.
Seriously? I'd be surprised if they added things in, because I'm pretty sure that of the collective who saw it at South By, one of the only complaints was that it was, like, a little too long. And I think at that time it was exactly 2 hours, if not a few minutes under.
Yeah, I'll be really proud of Judd Apatow if he's ever able to make a 90-minute movie from here. Like, just... Keep it tight. But I gotta say, like, it's a lot of fun. You know, there's really no missteps in it as far as comedics and stuff. It's just that it's that thing where you're like, well, no, I get it. Can we? But, you know, to that end, the finale is really long, but I wouldn't want to miss a frame of that. I love the finale of this movie.
I also, just before we wrap up, want to point out Bill Hader is a romantic lead in this, and he's very good. He has really good chemistry with Amy Schumer, I thought. And it's kind of a tough role because he's kind of the perfect guy, but, like, you know, he still has to be kind of interesting and funny and weird enough that you believe that him and Amy Schumer would be together, and I think he nails it.
I do wish that they would have let him be a little weirder. I feel like they tried so hard to, like, I feel like there must be weird shit that got cut, because it just seems
possible.
Like, why would you cast Bill Hader and not let him?
And I'll add that I thought Colin Quinn was great in this movie, and that was one of the parts that I appreciated the most, was her relationship with her father.
I appreciate her relationship with him. I didn't exactly love the sort of like hipster racism is what I'm going to call it. That thing where it's like, oh, he's saying offensive things, but it's funny because we know that this movie doesn't mean it. Like, I didn't love that. But I do think that, I mean, he does the best that he can with the material that he's given. And they do have a really strong, the two characters have a really strong relationship that I think does give the movie a lot of its emotional impact.
So and add Brie Larson in there, and I like that family dynamic. I would definitely recommend seeing this. I think it's a well above average commercial comedy that everybody could have some fun with.
Well, yeah, everybody think, above a certain age.
Right.
Don't I think kids well, a train wreck.
You're talking to someone who saw Scream in the theaters when she was 8. I have no
Scream
barriers.
Scream is a different situation. This is America. People, Scream parents can't handle sex. All right,
Billy Madison, when, like, what year did that come out? God, I must have been, like, 7.
But there's like overt sexual scenes. Like I like John Cena's body is a terrifying joke in this movie. Like I'm sure that works for some women. I was terrified.
All right, so what I'm hearing is you know, everyone go see it who's over a certain age, unless you're Perry or related to Perry, in which case even if you're 5, go see it.
You do you, Nemiroffs.
Yep.
It's how we roll.
Yeah, and I think we all want to see more from Amy Schumer.
Yeah. All right, so on to the next one now, Ant-Man. Angie, yep. You got that?
I do got that. Ant-Man, the newest Marvel movie, which I don't even know what number one now, like 12 or something. Here is the synopsis. Armed with a supersuit with the astonishing ability to shrink in scale but increase in strength, con man Scott Lang must embrace his inner hero and help his mentor, Dr. Hank Pym, plan and pull off a heist that will save the world. Paul Rudd plays Scott Lang. Michael Douglas plays Hank Pym. This used to be an Edgar Wright movie, but is now a Peyton Reed movie, which I think was, I think if you had heard of this a year ago, that's probably mostly what you knew about it. And I think all things considered, it works pretty well. So I feel like after the mess that was Avengers Age of Ultron, and especially how much of that mess came from its need to set up and like pay off everything in the Marvel Universe, Ant-Man felt like an awesome palate cleanser. Like, it's more standalone than most of the movies are. It's kind of more like Guardians of the Galaxy or the first Captain America in that respect, where it definitely has ties to the Marvel Universe and maybe even more ties than it strictly needs because, again, this is a Marvel movie. But it mostly works as a standalone. You could watch it without having seen any of the others, and it'll still more or less make sense to the extent that any movie about a incredible shrinking man is going to make sense.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I definitely appreciated that, how contained it was and how I didn't need to rely on everything that's happened
in a million movies before
and what's going to happen all down the line. But at the same time, I really did respect how well they wove in all the nods to the other movies and how they bring in, I mean, it's not a spoiler that What's-His-Face is in the movie,
no,
right?
It's in the trailer. Okay. I left it out right, of my review because so I thought I
loved,
it was.
I absolutely loved the way that they wove Falcon into the story because something about that felt like it should have been in this world. Like, it made sense that it was in this world, and it gave you this incredible fight scene that was so refreshing and just different and, like, nothing I've ever seen before. So I absolutely loved that. The only thing with Ant-Man that was missing for me was, I guess just, like, heart and a reason to care about the character. It felt more so like I was kind of just watching Scott Lang and the rest of them go about this whole crazy mission, and I was very entertained by that.
And he's getting upset.
I was very entertained by that, but really, did I care if Scott died or
because
anything?
Because it
like,
had a baby
really.
And not a puppy. That's the problem. Parents love, guys. Stop, children.
Stop that. I love Antony. I got very...
Exactly.
Right. Not going to go there, but...
Scott Lang is played
Antony.
By Paul Rudd, and that is reason enough to care. I'm kidding, but to be, you know, but on a more serious note, I really do think that, like, Paul Rudd is really pretty fantastic as Scott Lang, and he does feel like a different kind of superhero. For one thing, he is by far the most well-adjusted superhero I think we've, like, ever seen in a movie, so that was fun. But he's also got, like, this kind of low-key charm that, like, I was won over by him immediately and cared, and fine, I'll admit that I'm biased in favor of Paul Rudd, but one of the things that I thought this movie did pretty well was making the conflicts feel personal. That's a huge problem with a lot of, not even just Marvel movies, but, like, these, like, big studio blockbusters, is that it becomes about, like, saving the world and, like, you know, tears in the space-time continuum. Fuck you, Thor the Dark World. And then it doesn't have any time to focus on, like, you know, who these characters are and what makes them tick and what's driving them on, like, a personal level. And I thought that this movie did a pretty good job of that. I mean, it's true that some of the father-daughter stuff, and there's a lot of it, is, like, kind of cliched, but I thought it sold it pretty well.
I think I was just extremely distracted by the fact that Judy Greer is just getting shafted in like every single summer blockbuster.
This is like the third time she's in a movie this summer where it's like, oh great, Judy Greer is in it. Oh, she's in it for like five lines. Okay.
Yeah, she's the mom. Just like there's really no other descriptor. She's the mom. Anyway, I liked the background with like the whole thing that they're alluding to is the idea that Scott wants to get back with his, he wants to see his daughter again. And so he needs to get money in so he can get an apartment and show his, what his ex that his life is together. And I appreciated that. Where the movie loses me is that the fucking Pym family drama, I have no patience for. Like Hank Pym also has a daughter that he doesn't have a relationship with. Meh, meh, meh. And I might have been able to like that if fucking Hope were interesting at all, but she is just another Marvel nagging woman who shows up to be like, boys, ba-ba-da-ba-da. And like also plot-wise, it doesn't make fucking sense because like she knows everything about the technology and all this stuff, and she actually like works at the place where they want to steal from. So why the fuck not trust her with this? And it's like the rule's supposed to be like, because feelings and sadness and her mom and like the like they basically if Hope feels like she's been forced into this movie, and it she just has the worst like tropes of where she's just a nag and she bitches and moans, and they describe her as that pretty mean girl. And like both like, she's pretty, but she's mean. And then at the end, she's supposed to be in love with Scott and they kiss. And I was just like, okay, really? Like it felt like Jurassic World where it's like, well, we're a man and a woman, so I guess we're in love with each other. Like that all derailed me on this movie. Like I liked it. I liked that they were trying to keep things small. I think it was a really smart idea. And I want to see more Marvel movies that don't all have to be Avengers, Avengers, Avengers. Like I love Avengers, but like I like the idea of having smaller superhero stories. And I like that aspect. And I think the finale scene of this is absolutely astounding in the way it plays with thinking small in a literal sense and in a figurative sense. But
and in the way it keeps it personal. I think it's actually, it's probably one of, if not my favorite, Marvel third act.
Yeah, and I like a lot of that. My problem is that the movie fails to stay small because it just keeps adding on these characters. So, like, you have characters that are completely underserved, like the Judy Greer character, like her ex-husband character played by Bobby Cannavale, which, like, think of it this way. If they had combined the Bobby Cannavale and Judy Greer character so that, like, the wife was a cop tracking down her ex, that would have been way more interesting and given you a role that made sense. But no, we need to shove another dude in there because fathers or whatever. And so, and then you have his friends, which we haven't talked about. My favorite part of this movie is Scott's friends, who like two of them, whatever, T.I. and, I'm going to forget the other guy's name.
David Dalmachian.
Yeah, they're fine. They're good. Thumbs up. But Michael Pena steals this movie.
He's the real star of this movie.
Yeah, like he plays this like low rent thief that keeps getting Scott these jobs and this contact information. And like, it's like, you know, he's, instead of just being this typical Latino thug, he like makes Belgian waffles and appreciates abstract art and really loves rosés. And like, it sounds silly, but like he brings such a life into this character that it painted a whole world for me instantly as soon as he starts talking, that it was like, I wanted to hang out in that world, but they keep locking us in the Pym house where it's just Hope being mad.
Like, well, I think the only reason that that stuff worked for me, well enough at least, is because of Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas. I thought that they sold that whole issue well enough that
That I
understood why Michael Douglas was so stressed out about her doing what she wanted to do. And I kind of liked the payoff of, you know, the two of them coming together at the end and what happens to her. You know, it was the most distracting thing for her, with me at least. And it's like the Jurassic World syndrome all over again. Get ready
for
it.
That wig? That fucking... I have like, real hair. Okay. I don't care. It looks atrocious. It's
okay.
Distracting.
And you know what? I don't even care if it matches the comic. But like, who the hell... I don't know a single person in this world that has hair like that except her in this movie and Bryce Dallas Howard in Jurassic World.
Fun fact, I had that haircut in college, and you know what happened?
You know
people thought I was wearing a wig. That's what happened.
I want proof. I want to see that picture. And I bet you wear it better than they did.
Nope.
But how are movies going to signal cold?
I watched Amelie and decided that was a look I was going to do. Found out don't have the fucking facial structure for it. And found out like years later that people thought I was wearing a wig. They're like, oh, I remember that really great time where you guys went to that wedding and she wore that wig. Nope. I just thought dyeing my hair black and having the Amelie cut would be super cute. And it's not. It only works for Audrey Tautou and everyone else needs to stop.
It sounds like I'm complaining about something super trivial, like the whole heel issue. But the problem with characters like this is it makes her even less human than she already is. And
I agree with that.
It's distracting.
I didn't think the hair was that bad. But then again, it didn't piss me off in Jurassic World either because I was too distracted by her high heels. I feel like... okay, so I understand the conflict between her and Michael Douglas, and I feel like it's one of those things that works in a vacuum, but not in the larger context of the world that we live in. Basically, Michael Douglas' whole thing is, you know, he feels very protective of her, et cetera, et cetera. And that all makes sense to me. I understand where the character's coming from emotionally. I understand where her character's coming from emotionally. But this is a movie set in a larger cinematic universe where female characters are consistently underserved and shoved into thankless roles. And in that context, even though I understood, like, on one level, I understood where the characters are coming from emotionally, on that level, I just really had to roll my eyes and be like, because they like, as Christy said, they point out over and over again, there's really no reason for Paul Rudd's character to even be involved in this movie. It makes more sense for Evangeline Lilly's character to do the things that his character is doing.
And but Evangeline Lilly also did the same thing in The Hobbit, where you thought she had a cool character, but then she was like, "Ooh, I better fall in love with The Hobbit
because I don't have a vagina." I can't even blame Evangeline Lilly for that, though. Like, she's taking roles that, like, on paper, why wouldn't you want to take these roles? Really. Especially in The Hobbit, I think they promised her it wasn't going to be a love triangle.
Forget the paper. You get these roles, you're offered them, and you just take them because of what they are.
And I get that. Yeah. She's becoming a connective tissue between that strong female character problem, where it's like, they may be physically strong, that doesn't make them complex or interesting. And Hope's not interesting.
Before we wrap, we should probably also talk about Corey Stoll, who, I don't know how much I love this villain, but I thought that Corey Stoll himself did as much as he possibly could with it. Like, I actually believed his performance quite a bit. It's just the fact that I didn't find Yellowjacket to be a particularly interesting character.
I think it's because the movie tries to do too much. And so, like, the Darren stuff, I felt like they introduced Darren Cross and we were supposed to already know who he was. Like, it felt really taken for granted. And then he would just say stuff like, "Well, you were my mentor." And I'm like, okay, I get what I'm supposed to feel here, but it's not grounded.
Well, it would have been a lot more interesting if maybe the movie had focused less on Hank's relationship with Hope and instead had built up his relationship with Darren a bit more, so there was a little more conflict and you kind of understood why it was the biggest deal ever that he did that to him.
They want to set up some future character. Like, that's the main problem of the Marvel movie, is that because of the multi-universe, even when they're trying to keep it small, they're still trying to set up shit for future movies, just like Jurassic World was, where, you know, because we're setting up for sequels, we're fucking wasting time that we could be telling a nice, tight story.
It's so funny because this entire review started out with all of us being like, it's nice that it's more contained, but Marvel still has a long way to go before they can really work on that. And I do think that Corey Stoll, part of the problem with him is just Marvel movies in general have terrible villains. Loki is the only memorable one we've had so far, unless you count Winter Soldier, and he's not even really a villain. So.
Yeah, I liked Ultron.
He was fun. His motivations made
Ultron had a stupid plan.
It's not that the villains aren't fun. Like, I feel like Corey Stoll's having a lot of fun with this, and I enjoy watching him just be like, evil. But the character makes no sense.
No, he gets so little screen time that he goes, especially because we talked about this, he goes from, like, 5 minutes into the movie, he flat out murders a person, and then they show him repeatedly murdering sheep. And I was like, look, we've already showed him murdering a person. I know Perry's upset that a lamb got killed. I know.
A little bit.
But, like, that was at least in the vein of science. Like, he murdered a person in a bathroom and was like, whatevs.
Okay, let those of us who have not accidentally murdered a person in a bathroom cast the first stone, Christy.
He didn't accidentally.
Fine, purposely, whatever.
Like, I accidentally
you got nothing on
murdered
me, okay?
that person in a bathroom. That's different.
All right.
So, in conclusion,
what's the general consensus on this? I definitely say go see it. I think it's a lot of fun. It might not be up there with the best Marvel movies out there, but I think it is definitely a worthy addition. And, you know, it wasn't a total disaster. It actually came out pretty good. So, hey, points for Peyton Reed. Nice job.
Damning it with faint praise there. I think it's good. It's not great. Modest, manager expectations. And yeah, Peyton Reed did okay, but there's definitely points where when a joke doesn't work, I was just like, oh, poor Edgar Wright. And it's hard to shake that.
I agree with Perry. I think it's a good movie. I do think this movie deserves credit for trying something different and actually accomplishing some things that are different from Marvel. So, and also if you like Paul Rudd, then, you know, done. Go watch it.
And I want an ant farm. Come on. Who doesn't want an ant farm? You do know you'll come into my apartment next week and I will have an ant farm.
You do know that they actually have an officially licensed Ant-Man ant farm, right?
I've seen some Instagrams and I'm quite jealous of everybody who got them.
I feel like if we actually got you an ant farm, you'd just be like, ew, this is gross, get it out of my house.
Well, we would knock it over day one. You would have dirt everywhere and that would be the end of the ant farm.
Thank you for putting this into perspective for me before I made a big mistake. All right, so that is a wrap on episode 74 of Popcorn and Prosecco. If you could, go over to iTunes and please subscribe, and also you can rate and comment and tell us what you like about the show over there. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We have our YouTube channel. You can like us on Facebook, and we are also on Twitter, at Popcorn Prosecco. And on top of that, all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, do you want to take it first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter, at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
And you can find me on Twitter at Christy Puchko, KRISTYPUCHKO. And I write all over the internet, but you can keep up with me at decadentcriminals.com. And do check out that, because I did San Diego Comic-Con for the first time ever for a bunch of stuff for spinoff, and I'm going to put all the links there.
Oh, can I plug something? I'm sorry, I should have already said that. I'm going to do it now. Okay, well, one of the things that I'm working on right now and taking a break from is explaining the Ant-Man end credit scenes. So by the time this episode is up, that'll be up, so go check that out.
I will be checking that out immediately.
Well, I'll put links down here.
Sounds good. You can catch my writing on Collider.com, and I am on Twitter at PNemiroff. So that is a wrap on this episode. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you next week.
You're kind of cute.